podcast listeners. This is Kevin Eva again, the editor from Medical Education. I've started getting harassed from a few people for discussing the weather before I start these podcasts, and today I have the good fortune of speaking with someone who's suffering through worse weather than I am. Not that I'm taking pleasure in your pain, Sophie, but I should perhaps mention that I'm speaking with Dr. Sophie Park, who's a GP and teaches at UCL Medical School and is in the final throes of a doctoral dissertation at the Institute of Education. And Sophie, I understand you're sitting in London with minus 10 degree weather. Is that
absolutely true? It's freezing. Woolly socks.
Sophie told me just before we started recording that she has Canadians visiting, so I fear I have to take some of the blame for the weather that they took with them. Sophie, thanks very much for agreeing to speak with me, and I'll just let people know why I asked to speak with you this month, which is that you have a paper coming out in the April issue of Medical Education called Working with Words, Exploring Textual Analysis in Medical Education Research. And if I could just give a 10-second overview, the focus of your paper is quite methodological, trying to share some ideas and information with the community about how they can add or supplement or improve their research efforts through sophisticated textual analysis. Is that a fair summary?
Absolutely, yeah. We were just hoping to share some of our ideas about the variety of ways that you can think about what text is and how you might approach it, I guess.
And I suspect there are a lot of people out there who've tried to perform some form of textual analysis without even being aware that there are many different approaches, and the way in which you go about it, regardless of what you decide, will have some assumptions built into it. I wonder if I could just start by asking you to say some broad words for our listeners who might not be familiar with this strategy or your background. What got you into this in the first place, and what perspective you're bringing to the paper?
Absolutely. Well, thank you for asking me to do this as well. Well, I guess all three of us who were involved in writing the paper, you come through the medical traditional way of thinking about research and what text is and how you might approach it. And some of the quite traditional ways of looking at text are around content, thematic type analysis. And we've all been doing this education doctorate at the Institute of Education. Now our eyes have been open to, you know, a huge variety of different ways of both conceptualizing what text is, but also thinking about how you can actually approach it, unpick it, and what the impact of the researcher might be, and the importance of reflexivity and thinking about your own assumptions about text before you even begin to think what research question might be useful to ask, and then how you might approach it. So I guess some of this paper was trying to just share some of those insights and then use examples from our own work just to highlight different ways of looking at it along the spectrum which might be possible. Not in a way to privilege those, but just by saying, here's two different ways and look what they might do with the text.
Right. And so can I actually ask you to elaborate or give a sort of layperson definition for two of the words that I think you just used, one being hermeneutics and one being reflexivity. I think the paper is an example of reflexivity itself, but I suspect it's a word that many of our listeners won't have heard before.
Okay, so hermeneutics, I guess I understand there's very many different definitions, but around the art of interpretation and thinking about the different ways in which we can approach something and the different product that might produce. So, for example, if you're looking at a text, you might be thinking, firstly, how is this text being constructed by the authors and who was it being performed to? Who was the audience in mind? But then also thinking within your research on that text, who am I? What are my assumptions about the text? What's my background? What might that bring to the text? And then both of those kind of coming together to produce a meaning, a product of the research, and acknowledging that if somebody else approached this text with a different background and a different contextual history, they may well see something different within the text, and that's okay. There is no one right answer to analysing these things. There's a range, and each of them brings their own insight, if you like.
And so reflexivity then is just an awareness of that?
Well, it requires an awareness from the researcher as much as possible to be aware of what's influencing the way in which they see something, but also the ability to actually articulate and be explicit about that within the research. And that's part of the way in which the validity of that research is produced.
And so what do you say to those who argue that our biases are biases because we're not aware of them? How does one get to the point that they can lay over that reflexivity that you're talking about on their research efforts?
So I guess some of what we were trying to express in the paper was that although traditionally in medicine, truth, if you like, is defined in terms of objective correctness, there are other more subjective ways of defining truth through different ways of understanding meaning. And so although that is one quite dominant and powerful way of understanding truth, there are other ways of creating that. Some of the doctorate work that we've been doing has been quite heavily influenced by sociology, where you're thinking much more of truth being defined in terms of a co-construction, you know, it being created in a particular context for a particular audience, and acknowledging that that might actually alter what's produced. And if someone was put in a different context, you might get a slightly different answer. You'll get some similarities, but some different answers.
Right. And so this, I think, is an idea that somebody would be more likely to be familiar with in a context like taking an English literature course or something, where people are working with text of an author and debate the different perspectives on it. Are your arguments that you build up in this paper, are they applicable to any sort of text? Or do you find that the sorts of analyses you're discussing fit better in certain genres?
I hadn't really thought about that.
Sorry to put you on the spot.
No, that's fine. I guess we'd been thinking about it in the context of medical education research because we felt it was quite a new way of looking at it, or relatively new, and perhaps one which isn't valued quite so highly currently in medical education. But I guess there are other disciplines where this is a much more established way of looking at things. And broadly, you know, how we define science can be very different depending on what discipline we've come from. And I guess this is bringing together the disciplines that are traditionally associated with education and those of medicine, and trying to bring them together to see some new insights into processes which are happening in medical education.
Yeah, bringing it together in quite a productive and interesting way, I might add. I think that the more perspectives are brought to bear on the problems that medical educators are facing, the better. And so the introduction you've provided people to some extra tools that I'm sure will be quite useful. I wonder if I can get you to talk in a little bit more detail about one of the two methods that you describe in the paper for those who haven't read it yet. You talk about tag cloud analysis and performative narrative analysis. In the interest of time, maybe we can focus on one or the other. I'll let you choose which.
Both Anne and Deborah, who also wrote the paper with me, they both use tag clouds in a different context, looking at professionalism and some GMC documents. I'd use the performative and narrative analysis on some work that I was doing around stories that were produced by medical students about how they develop their professional identity. So we both said, look, these are two different ways of approaching text. They demonstrate different levels of analysis, if you like. Let's compare them and see what we get from the text. And the reason we chose the paper was because we felt that this text, which this white paper is called Liberating the NHS in the UK, it's causing huge controversy at the moment and could have massive implications on the way in which health is provided. From the second it was published, it's been incredibly powerful and already changed the organisation of provision of healthcare dramatically before it's even been formally approved. So we thought, well, let's look at this text and see how it performs, if you like. Particularly, we were interested in this chapter because it had the one paragraph within the whole document on education. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to look at what was happening within the paper and what sorts of insights we might get from the paper. And the performative narrative analysis approach, which is the one with which I'm more familiar, if you like, we're saying, well, let's look at the text in four different ways, conceptualizing text as a story, if you like, which is performed to another audience, and why is it performed in that way? So it's looking at context, the audience and the narrator, and then thinking about how associations of language, history and culture might be made to give rise to a particular performance practice. And then it's looking at what's included and then what's excluded within this story and why might that be the case. And then finally trying to unpick how the story, if we call the text a story, how it's legitimizing certain ways of looking at things or certain ways of behaving.
Okay. Is it a matter of going through the text and literally flagging up things that you think fit into any one of those categories? Or is there some other strategy that you typically adopt to try to get into this sort of analysis?
So we compared our two different ways of looking at it. The tag cloud was very much about counting the incidence of words and then saying, well, why are these particular words being featured quite highly and what might they mean? So that has its advantages of being able to whittle down a huge amount of text quite quickly into a sort of manageable way of accessing it,
right.
and then making interpretations in that way. I guess it was more unusual to be using the performative narrative analysis on an already existing piece of text, secondary data. I guess normally it's probably more commonly used to look at stories which are created for the researcher. But we compared how the interpretation is much more contextual. You're able to look at other documents and respond to those. You might be producing notes yourself as you respond to the text. You may have your own position beforehand, and then that influences how you respond to the text. It's much more time-consuming in that you are making interpretive judgments. And we decided we'd probably put performative narrative analysis within a meso level of interpretation, and the tag close would probably be more micro in that it's more conservative in the way it's looking at counting particular frequencies of words. Did that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. it's inevitably going to be challenging to get into details. I suspect this is one of those things that people need to try out in order to fully appreciate. And I'm sure you're like me in that with any new methodology, you'd encourage people to find a mentor who can support them through the use of it the first few times that it's done. I'm sure there's lots more reading that could be done around this sort of activity, but I wonder if I could ask you to help move our listeners a little bit closer to being able to do that by speaking a little bit about how they can try to determine whether or not they're applying the methods correctly.
Okay.
If there is such a thing.
I guess the term of correctness in itself is quite interesting within this hermeneutic range because, we laugh, one of our supervisors always says, what are the rules? But in interpretation, those rules are less clearly defined, but obviously you have to be explicit about the way in which you're approaching the text. I guess part of that rule, if you like. And there's different ways of doing performative narrative analysis, and you can, for example, use computer programs like MVivo and go through coding different bits of the data into the particular different areas of embodiment and the four categories which we outline in the paper. Or you can read it, which is another way I've tried of using it, and then write responsive paragraphs to different bits using the particular lenses of those four foci, if you like, for the story, and then beginning to look for how the language which is used is making associations with perhaps wider institutional or even global discourses and ideologies that you begin to think, be it conscious or subconscious, this text is performing with or to this particular way of looking at things, and that can produce some really useful insights about the text and what it's trying to say or what it's trying not to say.
Yeah, I knew the second I left my mouth that correct was the wrong word to use, but just
sorry.
No, you're right. I thank you for correcting me. In fact, I think it's a useful error which reinforces, I think, some of the points you're trying to make about how it is about interpretation and how it's particularly difficult for us often to look beyond that notion that there is one right way of doing things no matter how hard we try. So in fact, I'm going to suggest that that's probably a good place to end, because I think that people will get considerably more out of reading the paper, and I strongly encourage them to do that. It's, as I said, a very interesting, thought-provoking piece on different ways of using text, and thank you very much for putting it in the literature. I look forward to seeing the reaction. I should take this opportunity to alert listeners that by the time this podcast is posted and by the time the paper is released in mid to late March, we anticipate having the discussion boards launched for medical education, which you can find by clicking discuss on the mededuc.com website, and it'll give people an opportunity to respond and share some of their own ideas about the paper that you've just published, and certainly encourage all the listeners to take a look at that and get involved in some more interactive dialogue with authors and with other readers rather than just purely using the text. It might be an opportunity to explore some of the various interpretations that Sophie's describing in her paper.
Fantastic. Really interesting to hear people's ideas. Thank you.
Thanks again for making the time. I'll just remind people that I've been speaking with Dr. Sophie Park from UCL Medical School, and the paper we've been discussing is co-authored with Anne Griffin and Deborah Gill from the same institution, and it's titled Working with Words, Exploring Textual Analysis in Medical Education Research, and should be published in the April 2012 issue of Medical Education. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back again soon.
Thank you.